a break. Relax. Grab a coffee. And join the conversation with Mariska on Two Sugars.
This Wednesday afternoon. Well, that was an old song, Irene. You picked that song, I Am Woman by Helen Reddy. But, you know, that reminds me, I was having a chuckle to myself the other day, and I know I shared this with you, in an article I read in the Herald, actually, and it did make me laugh out loud. And what was it was called What If Men Got Their Periods? And so there was 10 things, and I thought we might discuss that this morning because I just thought it was quite funny. And so this is what, and who was, let me have a look who the writer was. It was Lee Suckling. And just for some context, he was talking about flexible working, obviously sticking around after the pandemic. But then he, for some reason, got onto the topic of menstruation. And then he said, well, what would happen if men got periods as well? So here was his 10 things. He said, we'd all work 3 weeks a month. Sanitary products would be free and ubiquitous. All blacks would advertise menstruation products. Blood would be glorified. Periods would be a huge focus among schoolboys. Men would tell everyone every month. On the rag would be a tame euphemism. Tech billionaires would be in a race to develop the best sanitary product. Endometriosis would be cured, and there would be high performance menstruation. So there you go. If men got pissed, now I just had to laugh at that. But I also had this little element of thought, this element of truth in that as well. So
there's a whole pile of truth in that. I actually love the fact that he's he's thinking about it from a man's point of view. So if you run through those things again, he's thinking of all the things that he's had to put up with a girlfriend or a wife or something. But there's a whole pile of things that he hasn't thought of that a man would actually have to put out. Like, for instance, when does he know an erection's an erection? For what reason? You know? I mean, there's a whole, I was hoping, a very dear friend of mine, I'm staying at his place at the moment, and I was hoping that he was going to be home this morning so that we could get a male perspective on this, because he thinks outside of the box and he would have come over with some hilarious things. But unfortunately he had to go out to work this morning, so he couldn't be here. But I can think of dozens and dozens and dozens of things that would, I mean, he's looking at it as, okay, all these things would change because men are the ones that are powerful in the world and men are the ones that make all the changes in the world, you know? So he's sort of thinking it on that basis. I think you'd find that menstruation, they could find a way to get rid of it altogether.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah, too much hassle, can't be bothered with this.
We're not doing this. My God, who gave us this? We're not doing this. We are changing it. We don't care whether it's going to corrupt Mother Nature or do anything really bad. We're changing it. We're not doing this.
Funny though how it kind of is really hidden away, and yet in some cultures, you know, it is a coming of age and it's much celebrated, you know, when the daughter first has her first period. But I'm sure, you know, and I'm going to make an assumption here, but I think most of the Western world, it's kind of, I don't know, it's almost hidden away somehow. Or is that just me thinking?
No, not at all. Here I go again. I honestly think it came out of the sort of English culture, and it's sort of like this yucky, no, we don't talk about it, we hide it, it's in the closet. And once again, it would have come from men, you know, because men didn't like, you know, having that problem around them. And so the wife wasn't allowed anywhere near the bedroom. She had to go and sleep in other quarters when she was menstruating. And when she was clean again, she was able to come back to his bed. So it definitely came from the English culture. You'll see that, you know, in the island cultures and the cultures that have been untouched from that sort of mindset, still treated as a very natural thing. It's not hidden, it's not treated as yucky. It's a young girl gets a period and the whole village knows about it, and they all support her and talk to her about it and bring her little gifts and things, and, you know, it's celebrated.
Actually, you know, just while you were talking there, I know within our Māori culture there's some taboo around it, and I didn't actually think about it because I was on a different train of thought, but I must look that up as well. I know there's some taboo around what a woman can do throughout that time as well, and there's things that that she shouldn't do, which is quite interesting as well. So there must obviously some taboo around that within our Māori culture here in New Zealand through that. But I mean, yeah, so, you know, I mean, I must say I've been lucky. I've never had any trouble with it, but I know a lot of women that do. And if our listeners out there remember Anne-Marie, she shared her story about endometriosis. I can never say that word. Gosh, what is it?
Endometriosis.
That's it. Endometriosis. Yeah, and she shared her story, and that really impacted her and her world, her work world. And so, you know, she would have loved, and she probably did end up actually, I think, you know, working 3 weeks a month and having to take that week off. And when I read that one as well, I also thought of that guy, who was it, the CEO of the EMA? I can't remember his name, but he got in so much trouble, he ended up resigning just by saying, you know, women are not as productive through that time. And I thought, well, so, okay, it didn't come out right, but there's some truth in that. So what? But because we, as you say, it's so hidden away, nobody talks about it.
Yeah, he just didn't express himself, didn't know how to express himself the correct way. But, I mean, that is totally true. Women are not as productive as men in a whole pile of areas in human nature, you know, childbirth, menstruation, all of those things. So that doesn't make us not valuable in the workforce, though, but I'm moving away into a different topic there. So when it came to the marriage boostings, from memory, I'm not sure that I've got this 100% right, but I think it was women weren't allowed to collect seafood.
Yeah, and cut flax, I think, is another one to make the baskets.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I know the seafood one was more on a when women were menstruating, they considered that it attracted too much livestock in the water. Oh. If they're out there swimming in the water collecting seafood and that. So to me, a lot of the taboos that they put on women menstruating were common sense ones. They were there for a reason, not because they considered menstruation to be an ugly thing, a thing that you needed to hide. More a protection thing for the woman, I think, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, interesting, eh? Yeah. And that second one, sanitary products would be free, absolutely. I mean, this is quite interesting because this has been quite topical in the news as well, the cost of them. And I know a lot of them now are putting them in schools for free. But, yeah, the cost must be huge. And it is. So they'd be free. Mm. Well, we could have, you know, the All Blacks would advertise them. Well, why can't our all of our women rugby teams and hockey teams and things? There we go. They're
our
all
white ferns, yep, our white ferns, etc. And they're all very prominent and out there, so the advertising would be very beneficial for the pharmaceutical companies who make all these products.
Absolutely.
But I think making them free. Is a really good thing because when you look at particularly a lot of the products that are made and the price of them and what actually goes into them, and they're expensive as an item of clothing, which they're about, you know, 1/100th the price cost-wise to make. So once it becomes free and governments are bargaining with these pharmaceutical companies for these, you know, bulk supplies of free stuff, then they'll probably stop making them because they're not making enough money out of them.
Yeah, that's true as well. And I love this one, the fourth one, blood would be glorified. And I'm just going to read out what he wrote here. He goes, rather than being seen as revolting, blood would be glorified if men had periods. We'd be obsessed with and proud of blood. High-performance cars would be made in period red. Blood would be shown on packaging of products, as might even look like Tarantino films with red splatters on camera lenses. Guy Ritchie's 2023 blockbuster could even be a menstruation movie.
Oh, my God. Never going to happen, but wouldn't it be hilarious? I can just see all the comedy movies now that would be able to be, you know, produced if men had periods. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, but the next one's even funnier, I just think. And you could just, I mean, you can just picture this in your mind. Periods would be a huge focus among schoolboys. Men would learn from school age to boast about the volume of blood they produced each month. We would be taught that periods are a rite of passage in manhood, something to be proud of. We would embellish the size of our flows and get competitive about who got their period first. Isn't that just, I just think that's just, it's just quite funny, isn't it?
And I just love the fact that it's a man that's writing that and not a woman. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, but it is interesting, isn't it, just thinking of it in a different perspective and where we've been and, and whether it will still, I mean, wasn't it was it a couple of years ago now, even the supermarkets were caught out, you know, it was kind of all hidden away and it wasn't even, I think it wasn't even named of what aisle it was in or it was, under some kind of common term and they were going, well, why can't you just call them sanitary products? What's the problem with that, you know? So isn't it interesting how this, you're right, this whole kind of all of society have hidden it away from us, yeah.
But listen to that. You've just said something. Why were they called sanitary products in the first place?
Oh, I know.
Why are they sanitary? So not sanitary.
I've no idea whatsoever.
A man would have made that name for them. They would get renamed if men had periods. They would be something, what's the name? They would be life positive flow products. They would have an enhanced name, not sanitation. Oh, that's the sanitation. That's like the rubbish disposal guy down the road. You really?
I don't know whether they've called them anything different in the supermarkets, actually. Don't know. You just kind of know which
aisle. They still call them sanitary products, because that's how everybody knows them by now. But sanitary products, that word would have come out way, way back when women were banned from being anywhere near men while they had it because it was unsanitary. Mm. You know, unsanitary process. So you have to have sanitary products. Oh, what bullshit!
So there you go. We'll put that link up on our Facebook page for all of you to have especially us ladies, to have a wee giggle at that. But you're right, too. And I actually kind of agree about that endometriosis. I'm sure it would be cured by now. And it's such an evil, evil disease. And I remember Anne-Marie talking us through it, and a real challenge. And often women are not believed, they just say, oh, you've got some cramps around your period type thing. And, it takes them a lot of pushing in their doctors to actually get diagnosed with it as well. So I'm sure that probably would be cured, to be fair. Yeah.
I think you're right. I know several women with this, and I think it's an absolutely ghastly disease. And quite frankly, every single one of my friends, because they go through so much pain and so many problems and that with it, I say, just have a hysterectomy. Just ask for a hysterectomy. That's about the only real way that it can be cured. There's nothing else that they can really do.
I suppose it's all about funding, isn't it? Where all the funding goes, who has the funding and who gets the funding to where stuff gets researched and done. Yeah. So there you go.
Not important. Not important. Give me periods and it'll be important. Oh, dead right.
So there we have it. There's a man's view on what would happen. But actually talking about the three-week-a-month work. Now, wouldn't that be interesting, a nice flexible and interesting how we have this? You've got the four-day week now. I suppose a four-day week almost makes up 3 weeks per month. How our kind of world is changing. And interesting at this time of the year is we're all going back to work, where some of us could still be at the beach working, because we have that flexible way of working now. So some interesting stuff that's come out of the last few years in the way that we work and the flexibility in this four-hour week. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really good from a worker's point of view. I think it's really great. It gives them more R&R and we're not going to have so many people screaming mental health at us all the time. But from a practical point of view, it just adds more cost in every area of our lives. If it's a four-day week that they're still having to pay the same amount of money for, so it means they've got more workers that they have to employ to get through the workload, which means costs go up considerably,
But I suppose if you kind of think of it that way, it's like having a pay rise. We're all trying to, everybody's going for a pay rise. So if you kind of drop down to a four-day week, is that your pay rise, but then it also spreads the work around. Which is a good thing that all people work.
We haven't got enough workers. All people either not working or we just don't have enough at the moment. So how would that work?
Oh, I know. That's a bit of a challenge, apparently. And as well as not having enough workers, there's not enough houses for them to live in, apparently, as well, especially down in Queenstown. Real struggle on the housing front, apparently. So got the workers down there, but they've got nowhere to live.
Just don't understand it. So who are all the people that have moved into the thousands of houses that have been built in Papatoetoe and Papakura and, down in Pokeno? There's thousands and thousands and thousands of slum areas, what I call potential slum areas, being built. Packed in. Where have all those people come from? Our population hasn't gone up.
I know in Queenstown as well. There's been huge growth down there and huge houses. So again, why is there a housing shortage? One thing I find interesting about Queenstown, they probably do. I don't know enough information about it, but you think kind of through the ski season and even through the summer season that they would have like a big hostel for all the overseas workers that come in. And then, you know, so they're not taking up rental flats and stuff for people that actually live there. But they have like particular accommodation, like they do on the Orchards and stuff. You know, they have the accommodation for those people. Maybe they do. I mean, I know they have a lot of hostels. Well, they have a few hostels down there. But I don't know where all those houses. Yeah, you're right, because the houses are full as soon as they're built.
Yeah, exactly. And our population hasn't gone up. So I don't get it. And we still have a rental shortage, you know. There isn't enough rental houses for everybody. So if the population hasn't gone up, the houses are being built and people are filling them, and we've still got a rental shortage, the figures don't add up, and it's totally confusing me. So if anybody can give us an answer to this, it would be really great.
Well, that's true, actually, yeah. And I kind of, you see it all the way through, though, and you're right. And interesting when you said about potential slum areas, is this because of the high density that you're thinking that?
I'm thinking of a load of things. Like, they've done away with a whole pile of council rules and regulations, which I think made for healthy family living. Like, you have a look at them down in Papakura, and they're three stories high, but they're really, really narrow, very, very narrow. And they are all built, wall, you know, side by side, like one wall is the next neighbour's wall sort of thing. And the section at the back is not much bigger than a handkerchief. I mean, you can get a clothesline on it and that's it. There's no room for kids to play. There's, you know, you can't put bikes and things out there or sand pit or anything. And the section in the front is even smaller. It's about 3 feet. What's that in metrics? I don't know. About 1 meter. It's about 1 meter wide of lawn before there's the fence and the road. There's no cars anywhere on this section. It is just the house and these two little squares. And there are acres and acres and acres and acres of these housing developments being built. There's no parks, so they're being built for the bigger families that have got, you know, four or more kids, but there's no parks. So normally if there was something like that, there would be a park in the centre that all the community can go to, the kids can play. There would be little corner shops that's got a dairy and, you know, maybe a hairdresser or something. None of that. It's just acre and acre and acre on housing. So where do those kids go? Out into the streets. Where do the cars park? In the streets. The streets are narrow. How are they going to park their cars? You know, I mean, there are so many problems going to arise from all of this. Kids are going to get run over, right, left and centre. They will bring the speed limit down to 5 mile an hour around the city.
I know, I agree with you, actually. There's a whole lot of being built out west as well, and you can only kind of get one car down the road at a time when, you know, does it park. And you feel claustrophobic because there's just all this stuff on top of you. So it will be interesting how we do adjust to this type of living where people kind of get ratty with each other, and you're right, to whether there's no parks or reserves around the place where the kids can play, because that's got to be huge. That's got to be a huge part of it. You know, if they had a big reserve or, as you say, park in the middle, that makes such a difference to the way that people live and the way that a community can be built. But if they haven't got that, yeah, there's going to be some wee bit of trouble out there. So we'll hold on.
I know. It's capitalism gone wrong. I mean, I used to believe in capitalism, but the total focus is on the money being made by the big property developers, and there's no focus on councils setting the rules and regulations up so that it's healthy and comfortable living for people anymore. Yeah, which is, anyway, politics.
Absolutely. So we'd love to hear your views on that. Pop onto our Facebook page. We will put the link up there for our 10 things of men's periods. And then, do you agree with Irene? Is this high density housing negative for us here if they don't get it right? Or is it something positive that is just going to be part of the different way that we live? Everybody, enjoy that summer holiday. Enjoy that sunshine when you're out. If you are having some sunshine, we certainly are here in Auckland. And we'll see you the same time, same place next week.
Sugars, brought to you by Delacro Communication. Delacro.co.nz.